You're listening to Intersections Radio. Program airs on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Sari Gametta. Thanks for listening. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn! Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows. Stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn! This is a show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet. Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path, I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine, we all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there, I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. Keep on saying, go slow. But that's just the trouble. Washing the windows. You're just plain rotten. You're too damn lazy. You're thinking it's crazy. Where am I going? What am I doing? I don't know. I don't know. Just try to do your very best. Stand up, be counted with all the rest. Cause everybody knows about Mississippi. Bet you thought I was kidding you. Picket lines, school boycotts, they try to say it's a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. Yes, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady. And you'd stop calling me Sister Sadie. Oh, this whole country is full of lies. You all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust you anymore. Keep on saying, go slow. Go slow. But that's just the trouble. Desegregation, mass participation, unification. Do things like
me. I'm not out to steal your money. I don't wanna take your time. I do deserve a little respect, so I'm gonna get what is mine. Cause, yeah, seem like old news. The whole world gone crazy. What am I gonna do? What I'm gonna tell my babies when they don't understand? My pressure, my struggle, my demands, yeah, back then, I didn't understand when my pops came home saying that he couldn't take it. But it's hard to be a good man knowing that a man's plan is to take what you making. Hold on, we're gonna make it.
is blackface.
Diversity of people.
A chink in the armor.
Washington Redskins.
Affirmative action.
I heard him behind my back say, oh, we better hide everything before the nigger steals everything.
This one kid said to me that, like, oh, I thought all Asians are supposed to be smart. Like, what's wrong with you?
It's very popular now for white kids to say the N-word.
I'm one of the bigger black guys, so when I get on the train, I get looks.
Talking about racial issues can be really uncomfortable.
Welcome to the radio scene. Today we're talking about the film I'm Not Racist, Am I? We're joined in studio by Nancy Parsons-Borland and Andre Robert Lee, both facilitator and producer of the film. Andre produces and directs films for television and for Point Made and his production company, Many Things Management. He's directed and produced The Prep School Negro, a film documenting his personal journey as a high school scholarship student, exploring what he gained intellectually but lost emotionally when he left the streets of Philadelphia each day for his elite private school. He went on to study at Tufts University, Connecticut College, lectured for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and lives and works in New York. This film, I'm Not Racist, Am I?, was co-produced by the Calhoun School, Point Made Films, as a part of the school's Deconstructing Race project, a larger initiative designed to transform a silenced conversation and fundamentally alter the dialogue surrounding white privilege and structural and systematic racism for K through 12th grade students, their parents, and teachers. The film follows 12 New York teens as they spend a year trying to redefine what it means to be racist. Through a series of educational workshops and retreats, they come to terms with their own misconceptions of America's racial dynamics. Some of the students begin with experiences more evolved and nuanced, but they all go through intense emotional transformations over the year. The filmmakers use the movie as an educational piece and a catalyst for emotional discussions at schools and events across the country. They tour the nation hosting screenings for students, educators, and parents.
How many people in your classrooms have had diversity days in your school and things like that? This workshop is not about any of that.
Race has always been there. People need to see that. Instead of ignoring it and trying to be like, there's no segregation, there's no slavery, it's still here though, and people need to know.
Welcome, Nancy and Andre.
Thank you very much.
So tell me a bit about some of the persistent misconceptions about race and racism that come up in this film and the discussions that take place afterwards.
Thanks for that. It's interesting. I'll start with the title, actually. The film is called I'm Not Racist, Am I? And what we often get is we'll go places and folks introduce it at these schools and colleges and law firms and churches, and they'll say, I'm not a racist, am I? And we think, okay, that's, people hear the title and something happens, which is an indicator of why we need to have these conversations. Because I think what typically happens is people get more concerned about being called a racist than they do about the actual topic of racism. And so our conversation that we try and lead is, what does it mean to explore these concepts of racism? How do you define it? Do you experience it? What do you do when you do experience it? And then we also add another element to ask people to think about, what impact does actual race have on your daily life? And note, that's race, not racism.
And Nancy, I guess that's kind of the nuance I'm talking about, is the difference between personal racism and the system of racism, and how, you know, who we are plays into that. Is that, I guess, one of the major themes of the film, or the lessons learned of the film?
I think that's something that comes up a lot in our conversations, that people tend to focus on individual racism rather than the bigger picture of systemic racism that is in our institutions, and the impact that it has on different groups of marginalized people.
And also the concept of, I guess, what's called critical race theory, or the fact that to be racist is not the same as prejudice, I guess. And to be racist, you actually have to have some sort of power over.
I think that's definitely, Andre, you can speak to this too, but I think that's definitely something that's a sensitive topic. Many people that work in academia and in social justice, they really use the definition of racism as systemic, and talk about how white people are racist and all white people are racist because they all benefit from the system and benefit from being white, having the privilege of being white. And that's a very controversial thing. But people don't want to think about it in those bigger terms. They just think of it as, you're racist, I'm not a racist. And it's much more complex than that. And I'm not saying that the definition is right or wrong, but that is the definition that academics and social justice people use, and it's been around for years. It's not a new definition, but I think a lot of people have not heard it because we tend to focus on the individual racism. And so when they do hear it, they're like, you're redefining racism, and it's not. It's not a new concept or definition.
Mm-hmm. And I'll jump in and say that sometimes the focus in the conversation gets a little off whack. You know, we had a screening in Massachusetts at a private high school, and a seventh grade kid stood up and said, I guess it was middle school, and said, you know, this conversation is really raggedy. And we said, yeah, that's what it has to be. You know, we don't come in and say, this is our definition, this is how you must conceive and perceive this. We say, let's explore this concept. You're witnessing the kids experience their first time hearing the definition of racism through a systemic lens. They had that moment, and then they went through a whole journey on that year of talking to each other. Some agree with the definition, some did not. The point is, like, we don't walk in saying we're here to point out who is and who's not racist. That's not the point of our work. The point of our work is there are complex issues happening in our society that we need to explore and talk about, and how can we engage in this uncomfortable conversation, which are steps towards helping us fix some of these problems that exist in our world.
We like to, as we say, call people in, not call people out.
Deep down, I'm like, oh, I wish I was white.
Because we're black, that we're not gonna make it in the world. We're at risk of failing.
I have felt like there's been racism towards me. Like when people are yelling like, oh, you cracker, go back to where you came from.
We're asking folks to recycle their definition of what a racist is.
We're in a really, really highly tense, stressed, polarized environment right now. And Andre and I were talking today about the screening, and I was just talking about how I recently read something that he also read by Carl Sagan, just talking about how people are wired to think and believe certain things, and that happens at a very early age. So at our age now, as adults, we're all wired to believe things and think a certain way. So when we hear new information, if it doesn't fit that framework that we already have, that we're wired to believe, then we just say no, and we don't accept it, or we won't acknowledge it. And I think the thing that really helped me when I was a good reminder for me, and I think is a good reminder for everyone at this time, is to acknowledge that and be aware of that. And then when that happens, interrupt it by saying, you know what, that's not how I was taught to think, or that's not within the framework of what I usually think or believe, but I'm going to just consider it as a possibility and consider for a minute, what if that's true, mm-hmm. and consider somebody else's perspective.
I think I'm privileged in ways, but I think I am privileged. I'm privileged with having a family that loves me. I'm privileged with having a roof over my head. I'm privileged with having food, but I don't think I'm privileged because, like, my parents can buy my way into, like, going to Yale or something like that. I think that, like, I have to work hard to, like, get to what I want to be. I'm not going to just be like, oh, I'm just going to be, like, the head of my father's CEO business or something. Like, I have to work. So I'm not, like, privileged with my whole life set out for me already.
Are we really out of grade of cheese?
No, it's right under
it. And I guess that can be a hard pill to swallow for audiences. And it seems like even some of the kids in the film, the concept of, you know, just like you said, you're not saying if it's right or wrong, but just the concept of being white means to be racist because you benefit from these privileges in society. You know, how does the film address that? And in the discussions, how do you address it, especially
to white people who may not see that privilege, especially if they're like, say, not economically privileged themselves? How do they internalize that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been to hundreds of places around the country. We've been to every region in the country so far with the film. And this is actually our second visit here to Portland. We first went to the Jesuit school, or Jesuit, I guess it is. And that was intense, you know, because we're coming in. And what you tend to get is people often say, I'm a good person. I'm not doing these things. What are you talking about? I don't want to give away all that we do in our workshops, because I want to encourage people to come and actually do the work. But for the most part, we start by saying, you know what, come into the room and get comfortable being uncomfortable. And we're happy to report that no one has really suffered terribly in one of our workshops. It's hard. It's intense work. Sometimes there are tears. Sometimes there are heavy debates. But the thought is, if we don't do this, if we don't lean into this discomfort and embrace this tension, we miss the opportunity to really grow and move forward. So you witness, I think the best part, the reason why I think the kids work so well, is adults often watch these young people go through this exercise and workshops, and it's almost embarrassing to them to think, like, wow, these young high school teenagers, they're dealing with this. Why can't I do that? And also young people will look at it and say, whoa, if they can do this, I can do this too.
Well, speaking of, you know, youth versus the adults, who seems to benefit most from this? I mean, I know you aim this at youth, it seems like, but you do use it as a teaching tool for educators and parents as well. And, you know, there's that kind of common refrain that millennials are kind of less concerned with racial differences than previous generations. But at the same time, this movie delves into concepts, you know, like we're talking about, you know, critical race theory and internalized racism that maybe many of these kids haven't encountered before. So how are these, you know, different groups impacted, kids versus adults?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting, that question, because I find often as we go into a school and the faculty and administration is freaking out, saying this is too hard, this is not going to work, I'm afraid you're opening Pandora's box. And then the young people jump in and they're ready. They're like, oh, we need to talk about this. Thank you for bringing this. And they jump in and have conversation. I will say, what I've seen as we travel the country, kids of color oftentimes breathe a big sigh of relief, saying this is the deepest we've gone in this conversation, and this is great. We often see white students struggling with it. And the thing I like to say to people, and we have to remember as facilitators, is that we're not going to fix this. We're not going to end racism in one screening. This is just the beginning. We're planting a seed, you know. So if I had to say who benefits the most, I actually will go and say it might be the adults mm-hmm. that do it, that benefit the most, because they see the kids ready and jumping into it and having a dialogue. And I think they realize that a lot of the fears they had are because of their own personal worries and disconnection with the topic and their inability to really dive into the conversation in important ways.
At least what I've heard, because I do the assessments for the schools before we go in, and I think that a lot of what I've had expressed to me from some of the diversity coordinators and people is that people feel like they don't have the language. They don't have the words to express and to have that conversation. So I think that's one of the things and one of the ways that the film is really helpful to adults and people that we work with, is that we're able to help them, give them some of the tools and the language and the definitions to start having the conversation. When many of these people have not ever had these conversations.
Now, you mentioned the kind of time that we're in and how times have kind of changed now. It seems that we are in a heightened racial climate now, you know, given the Trump regime. Have conversations changed in these film screenings following the arrival of the Trump administration?
Oh, yeah. the conversations definitely have changed. It's once again, every region, every area is different. And it's funny because I've had people in the North go, oh, it must be harder in the South to have these talks. I'm like, you know what? Don't try and get an escape and say they're worse than us. That's mm-hmm. You're not getting out like that. So what I have seen, I say the level of intensity of the conversations have changed. I think more people are showing up. because they need some way to express themselves. I'll say this. A school in Massachusetts, I was at about 4 weeks ago, after the screening, this white kid stood up, a white boy stood up and said, you know, I don't know how to say this, but I'm just going to say it. I find that I'm really uncomfortable around people of color, and I felt a need to say that. And he sat back down. You know, and and the room was kind of like, whoa. And there was one person who responded. And I said, no, you know what? This is exactly what needs to happen. Because the fact that he did this in this room with this crowd versus going back to his dorm room, it was a boarding school, and sitting with his friends that looked just like him, they could potentially go down a dangerous path. But instead, he was like, wait a minute, the way I'm feeling probably isn't right. And I know doesn't make any sense, but it's something I'm feeling. I need to stand up and say it. And so, I mean, it's intense. We had a few screenings that are not worth mentioning that got really rough and nasty, but nothing out of control. Even the one that was rough and nasty, the thing, I was with Catherine at a school in the Midwest. The thing we said was, you know what, that school is now awake. They're woke, as the kids say, and there's no going back. And that was really powerful. So I would say, to go back to the big answer, the intensity of the workshops has increased. It's heightened for sure, yeah. With this new regime we have in power.
Well, and people, it seems like, too, feel like they have, they can be a little more honest, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, for that kid to stand up and say, I'm uncomfortable around people of color, you know, as a person of color myself, to hear that, you know, at first you can be like, oh. But really, he was being honest, and he also is not the only person that feels that way.
Exactly.
There are a lot of people that look like him. There are a lot of white people that feel that way and feel ashamed and guilty about saying that. And if that's how they feel, that's just honest. Mm-hmm. And we need to talk about it.
Yeah, our approach to this work is we don't believe in throwing grenades. So an institution can never screen our film without one of us there. There are probably five or six of us that are, actually maybe seven or eight, of us who are facilitators around the country. We all get trained, we sit down and work together, and we practice how to lead difficult dialogues. And the thinking is that we find that when people have support around the conversation and it's guided and if it's facilitated, we don't walk in and say, this is what you saw, this is how you should think. We start with, how are you feeling right now? And we dig into it. When you let the room solve the problem and solve the difficulty, it's very different than when someone comes and gives you a lecture of what the problem is, because folks can take it into their own hand. It gets tough sometimes because you want to go, no, that's not it. But you don't do, as a facilitator, you don't do that. You step back and you encourage folks to participate. So our strategy for this is trying to find ways to best engage people and meet them where they are. So place A may have like the 500 level course, the graduate level course, and place B may have it's just like intro to the curriculum, because they're at a very different space. As Nancy said, we do assessments before we go visit a place and say, okay, so where are you in this conversation? And then she shares with the whole team, and then we decide how to really go in. And if a school is really not ready, if they're not ready for, because this isn't intro work. You know, if they're not ready for this intense conversation, we won't go, because we do not believe in disrupting the work that's necessary to deconstruct racism. Because sometimes you can go to people and they just shut down.
And it can be more harmful than
helpful. Yeah, yeah.
So,
what kind of long-term effect has the participation of this film had on the kids that were participants? What are their lives like now? In terms, are they still involved with the film at all? Do they keep in contact with you? You know, how did it change their life?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say every single student was changed. For one, they're in high school, so everything is going to change. They're changing every darn day. But I've been in touch with all of them, and I touch base. One actually just sent me a television network he's launching in college around the issues, trying to look at it from a different perspective, which is interesting. They all are. Everyone is involved in this work in some capacity, whether it is their small little communities or a larger outreach of their campus communities. They've all been changed, which is great. And the best thing is, they don't say they have the answers, they say, I need to explore it. You know, one of the most powerful moments is some of the white kids have said, I even have a bigger and different responsibility as a white person to have this conversation with other white people. And that right there, I'm like, that's what's up. You know, that's really great. And the, for the kids of color, what I've seen, which really is really powerful, is them feeling more extra empowered and saying, you know what I've been feeling and thinking isn't just something I should be ashamed of or not to be discussed. It's actually really real in our society. So all of them have been changed. All of them are involved. We're actually working on a little strategy right now because we did a screening out in, we did a screening in a city I'm not remembering right now. I forget where we were. We go to so many darn places, and we took two of the kids with us, and they led part of the facilitation, and they got a standing ovation. And it was great because I was really nervous. I was thinking, oh, well, are they going to get it? Will it make sense? Oh, we were in Colorado. We were in Denver. We're in Denver, Colorado with two of the kids, and they led the facilitation, and they got it right away. And the audience was really happy, and the audience gave a standing ovation, as I said, because they could talk about it so intensely. And it was really interesting to watch them watch themselves some 3-4 years ago and think about where they are right now. And it was two characters in the film, Terrence and Martha, who kind of go at it. Mm-hmm. And here they were on stage, and I was like, what is going to happen? But it was great. It was great.
Why don't you let us both grow and say something?
You learn to not to mess with the white people.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
You know, that's kind of how it is.
I'm not a Klans person. I have no relation to anyone in the Klan. Ever!
You're hurting right now, and that's how I feel too.
Well, the idea has come of what's a way to bring in more students to actually be facilitators of discussion also. Because I think it's really powerful to see people who were in the film years ago and where they are now, and to lead some of the conversation.
Very good. Nancy, Andre, thanks very much for coming to KBOO.
Thanks for having us. This is exciting. This is great.
To learn more about I'm Not Racist, Am I? Go to notracistmovie.com.
People don't do what you're doing here, which is why we freaking have so much racism, hate, injustice.
Even if you don't think that it affects you, I mean, it does undoubtedly.
Don't feel bad that you're given something. Feel bad that others aren't given it.
Just being in this group made me think a little differently about white people.
This is like the best teamwork ever.
We're gonna talk about it, we're gonna deal with it, we're gonna find something. And if we're the future, at least we know that we're not gonna let this happen for much longer.
Telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me, please. But he whines.